Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Glad to hit a conference call again.
Yes. Took several tries, though.
The system is have significant amount of problems. There's no question about that.
Yeah, well, everybody's home and they're on their they're probably the overburdened line, you know.
Yeah, correct. Everybody's trying to connect with everybody else in all these internet-related systems. So,
mm-hmm. Yes.
This is the internet, but it's part of the phone system. They're saying it's not really our fault. It's the overall problem with the phone system.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I'm not sure if that's true or not. I don't... The economic process of trying to change is extremely difficult. So that's why. Shall we start, or are we waiting for people?
Well, I thought sure there would be somebody else. I haven't really talked to. We've kind of texted a few times, not very much, because we're all so busy preparing for Passover.
Well, let's give it one more minute, then we can start.
Okay. Well, we can at least do one verse.
Yeah, we definitely will do one verse, if not more.
Here we go. I heard
him. Good evening.
Good evening.
So we are beginning with the L'shem Yichud, and then we will start with the Sulam commentary on the Zohar from Parashat Vayera, in section 7, Pasuk 107. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bidchilu Urchimu Udchilu Udchilu Urchimu L'yachta L'shem Yudhei Bavavhei V'yichuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayhino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Kananei Aleinu Maasei Yadenu Kananei Verse 107. Rabbi Shimon Amar Begin Lehat Kana Takana Lhahu Yar Gadi Abraham Uman Ihu Maim Begin Kach At Ken Ledaka'a Bene Alma Bemaya Usha Ta De Azmin Lemalakin Sheruta Demiloi Makitil Yukach Nameat Maim Begin Ligitak Ba Bahahu Darga Damain Sharan Ba. The translation. Rabbi Shimon said, this is why Abraham engaged in ritual immersion to rectify Abraham's grave. And what is his grave? It is waters, namely chasadim, that are called waters. Because of this, he prepared people to be purified with water. And when he invited the angels, his first words were, as it is written, let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, to strengthen himself with that grade which contains water, namely chesed. My commentary. The pasuk is clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's comments. One can now see that Abraham knew the men were angels, as he did not prepare a ritual bath. There was no need. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I think what he experienced, that's what he wanted to help others with. And I think Hashem gave him those gifts at that time, that period in history, you know, that was his calling. Like you said, he didn't need to purify the angels because he recognized that they were angels.
Your comment about that period in history.
Well, no.
It's a good comment. I'm thinking in terms of Abraham's purpose in this life. And there's a difference between the purpose in your life and the tikkun of your life, although there's some overlap. His purpose in life was to spread the knowledge of the one God to the people of his generation. And he wrote the Sefer Yetzirah for that purpose. And we've talked about at one point there were 400 chapters of the Sefer Yetzirah. And we only have 6 chapters left, so that it's been reorganized, and that is attributed to Rabbi Akiva. But the question, what this verse is really talking about, what is the greatest chesed, loving kindness, that a person can do for another person? Another way of phrasing the question is, what is the greatest chesed a person can do, a parent can do for a child? It's easier to understand at that level. The greatest chesed a parent can do for a child is to prepare the child for the world, to cope with his life. But when we think about what is Abraham's greatest purpose, greatest chesed, it's preparing the world for the truth of the one God. That is his chesed. That is his role in life. And that's what he was doing. The previous verse that we discussed and this verse is all relating to that understanding at different levels. I hope this, what I've just said, is clear and tied together to what was in the previous verse. And then it becomes clear why Abraham was such a great personality, a great man, because this was his role and he did it. His tikkun was involved with the binding, because Isaac had to be bound, not sacrificed. And we know from the study of the binding that Abraham knew that he wasn't going to kill Isaac. But the agreement between the two, the parent and the child, they each had to go against their nature. That was their tikkun. But this was before the binding. This is the way he was spreading the knowledge of the one God. I hope I didn't cut anybody off. I thought I might have.
No, I don't think so. Unless it was Malko.
Did you want to say something, Malko?
No, sir.
Okay.
You know, we're still doing the same thing. So I'm wondering if it's kind of the tikkun of the convert. And, you know, we identify so much with Abraham and the people that come in our lives. They're not people who know Hashem. So, as a one God.
Well, I think my understanding, and it's a very limited understanding of Christianity, is that it has this essence of the one God in the sense of the, I know that the Catholic Church teaches the Trinity, but the other forms of Christianity, it's primarily directed towards the relationship with God. And as I said, it's my limited understanding because I really never studied it in detail.
Well, I can tell you my experience, and that was like 25, 30 years ago. In Jewish circles, it was taught or it was said that Christianity was an worship religion. And that actually the Muslims was closer to Judaism because of their belief in the one God. But then,
and that is still true.
Okay, but it was kind of talked. Now you don't hear the talk anymore. It's like, oh no, they believe in one God. You know, so. And I know the people that I encounter from. It was because they knew that I was one that liked to study, and you know they would come to me and ask.
They will search you out because you made that transition. They're uncomfortable with what they're being taught,
mm-hmm.
or. You know, what truly, the way Judaism refers to it is that the phrase is the pintle yid, that spark of the Jewish soul that gets motivated.
But in the last 5 years, the people who would come to the synagogue because of technology and because of being able to study online, it was like they didn't actually need a one-on-one encounter with a person. They already came with knowledge, and because of being able to get online and all the different resources that are available today. So I think they, right at first, it would be like they had to hear it from a person they could see that they were on the right track. Of their understanding, and so it's different than it was, say, 25 years ago.
I can agree with that statement very well. It's different in Judaism. It's different
mm-hmm.
when I found the Kabbalah Center. I could not ever relate to Orthodox Judaism because I was coming from a secular base, and until the essence of what Kabbalah teaches was presented in a way that it was available to what I will call the common man, which I identify with, and that was the Kabbalah Center, and that's literally the process and what was taught. When I first was introduced to the Kabbalah Center, Kabbalah was frowned upon to be taught, and that's a very minor way of describing the relationship between Judaism and Kabbalah. And it just was not available. But within 2 years of the time I started, there were teachers in Los Angeles from all of the Orthodox traditions all trying to keep people from going to the Kabbalah Center by offering some form of Kabbalah within the frame of their tradition. And it was only when Rabbi Berg explained it in the sense of these two terms, Sitrei Torah, which means Torah secrets, mm-hmm. and Ta'amei Torah, which is the taste of Torah. And those are terms that come out of Rabbi Ashlag's writings. But when that was brought into public awareness, and I could have a conversation with an Orthodox person, when I would sit in a kosher restaurant and we'd talk, we'd schmooze is the Yiddish term, we'd talk with each other and find out about each other and play the Jewish geography game. But when that conversation took place, there was nothing to identify. There was no way to discuss it until that terminology could be said to the Orthodox man or woman. This is the difference. The Kabbalah Center would only teach Ta'amei Torah, not Sitrei Torah. And the reason being, the Sitrei Torah can only be taught essentially by Eliyahu, essentially by a person taking the native, the individual pathway, and making connections with souls that have passed on through their writings. But as soon as you said to that Orthodox person that this is Ta'amei Torah, the taste of Torah, rather than the secrets, all of the barriers would start to come down. They didn't come down immediately, but they would start to come down. And so even, as you say, it's different than 25 years ago, it's also within Judaism it's different.
But don't you think that's a step toward finally seeing unity among diversity? That we're moving more toward finally seeing that we are one people? You know, humanity.
Yes, yes, I agree with you, and it's even on the political spectrum. Because I was just listening to a video by one of the members of the Knesset. He said he's a member of the 19th Knesset, and I'm not sure if this is the 19th one that's coming in or the 19th one that was going out. So it's not clear to me because I didn't know the man from previous readings. But what he was explaining was very clear on why Benny Gantz accepted the relationship with Netanyahu to form the unity government, which is not yet formed because it's very complex with respect to the egos, which is very much a significant part of politics. But it's being played out just as you said. People are realizing more and more, and if it gets into politics to realize that, that is a significant step forward in the process of creating unity by appreciating the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Should I go on to Pasuk 108?
Well, if you have time. I'm awake now. You woke me up. I was kind of dragging, slow and tired. But it perked me up. So. Go another verse.
Okay. Pasuk 108. Ugine kach Awam da ke le kol bene nasha. Nikola mida ke lon mesitra beaz. Da ke lon mesitra. Dim ta ava le kama. Ei hu mada ke le kubrain. Hey nun sara medaka manashin ishtaka hu kalho diatyan lakabaihu kafyan nikola. The translation. This is how he purified people from all sins, including those from the impure side and idol worshipping. And just as he purified the men, so did he purify the women. Therefore, all those who came to him were completely purified from idol worshipping and defilement. My commentary is that this pasuk is clear as written. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Well, we see a unity between he and Sarah, you know, between male and female, and as well as husband and wife.
Right. But to me, the verse is clear because it's really saying that they did their job, which was to introduce one God to people, and in order to introduce one God to people, they had to be willing to leave idol worshiping and defilement and impurity. And so he wouldn't really introduce these concepts until they were purified. As the Midrash said, we know about his the tent having openings on four sides. So he would welcome travelers into the tent and offer them a meal. And the Midrash says that he would not serve them the meal without them having gone to the mikveh. And he would know by the way the water related to the people whether it would rise to greet them, whether they were impure or not, or to the level of their impurity. But he would not introduce the whole subject to them. And he wouldn't obviously convert anyone without going through the mikveh. And so this whole idea of you have someone in our generation, in every generation, you have someone who is born to a Jewish mother as being a Jew, and someone who converts, which means that they had a Jewish soul and the body needed to be purified, which is what the mikveh does, and be given the additional desire to receive that was received on Mount Sinai. And that's what makes the difference between the Jewish person and the non-Jewish person, is the strength of their desire to receive, because we all needed that additional desire to receive to reveal the light that came out of the Torah, that came out of the gift of the Torah, that came out of what happened at Mount Sinai. So it all ties together, and so this verse became very clear to me that that's what it was expressing, and that's why there was no need for Rabbi Ashlag to have any comments on the verse.
Well, nothing is mentioned about circumcision, at least not yet.
Well, when we studied circumcision, that whole section that we had, almost 100 verses on circumcision. When we studied that, that was very clearly expressing those ideas in various different ways.
Mm-hmm. But what I meant was here. It's talking about water and chesed, so...
Right.
You know.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Baka.
What subject, when would invite individuals to chant and talk about God, what subject would he talk about? What, because he's just out of,
Malcolm, you're breaking up, but I think your question is asking what subject did Abraham talk about with the visitors, with the people he was welcoming to his tent?
Yeah.
People before they were purified.
Yes.
And I don't have any direct knowledge, but my sense is he would do the normal small talk. Where are you coming from? Where are you going to? What kind of family do you have? What is your background? Typical small talk of when you are introducing yourself to someone.
Did he talk about his experience in... with the
people
fire?
Knew about, after, at one point, literally, when he first arrived in Israel, people did not know about his experience. But after, you know, going down to Egypt and then coming back from Egypt, and as he toured around the land, his reputation precedes him. Because people talk about other people. They talk about what happens to people. A lot of times, unfortunately, they exaggerate. And they will... and it becomes recluse. It becomes a negative form of Lashon Hara rather than the truth. But people are prone to talk about people. Because we find people interesting. And so when they came to his tent, they knew about him, but he didn't know about them. So he would engage in that type of small talk, which would give him insights. And since he had the tools of Kabbalah in the sense of being able to read hand and face reading, it was all part of the process of him evaluating whether this is someone he should talk to about it. This is someone that he's willing to, you know, to bring into the mikveh and start to purify them. And we know he brought many people from Ur Kasdim when he left it, because he had survived the fire and he'd been through, you know, seven or eight of the trials in his life. So when he left Ur Kasdim, that he left with Nefeshot, and these were the souls of people that he had already influenced to search and make connection to the one God.
Had true witnesses of his experience that could validate his experience.
Again, you're breaking up, so I'm not hearing. Hannah, are you hearing her?
Okay, I'm going to hang on.
So Abraham had witnesses, because he brought them with him on the journey. So actually had witnesses to validate his experience with the one God. So
yes.
I didn't know if that was part of the subject that he would talk about, and others would say, yes, I was there, or yes, I saw. You know, that's part of, and I just wonder what part of the oral law, what part of the, which the Torah wasn't given at that point, was it?
No,
I know Shem was, Shem was still alive, I believe, and so many others were alive as well that taught.
Yes.
That taught him. So I'm just thinking, did he get some teachings to bring forth to the strangers that would come in, souls that would come in?
Well, that's what the writings of the Sefer Yetzirah do. The 400 chapters that he initially wrote was basically, how do you broach the subject? How do you bring the subject of one God to people who are not interested? It's the same thing that goes on today. You have people who are very connected to physicality. But you also have to think in terms of, Abraham would not talk about himself, because the Jewish nation is to be a light unto the nations. It isn't supposed to be, I'm great and therefore you should come to me.
Right.
And it, as we know with converts, there's a lot of, initially when you approach a rabbi to convert, there's a process where he pushes you away. He describes how difficult it is to be a Jew. And that whole idea, Abraham was not going to talk about himself. The people he brought with him into the land of Israel from Ur Kasdim, they might talk to the people, but it wasn't that they were in his tent. When he came with these, let's say it's 100 families. I have no idea the quantity, but if we say it's 100 families, they were his shepherds. They were the people who worked for him.
Right.
He didn't have, you know, he didn't have 100 people sitting in his tent when this one traveler would come in. You know, he was a family. Yes, he had guards, and yes, he had people who would defend him. But it was a nomadic existence as we understand it. So, mm-hmm. You know, they were settling around him, but they weren't building a town. If you understand the point I'm trying to get across.
Yeah, absolutely. I do understand that, but I just didn't know what was taught to the individuals
to the individuals was, how do you connect to God? Which is essentially the tools of the Kabbalah. That's what was taught to people. But it wasn't just taught willy-nilly. It was taught to those who were open to it, to those who were purified, to those who were choosing to ask the questions.
Well, it had to be pretty powerful for him to take them into the mikvah. You know, after speaking with them, you know, it had to have a,
yes.
It must have been a powerful presentation.
Well, it absolutely is. If you go through the six chapters of the Sefer Yetzirah that we talk about, that I teach, if you take those chapters one at a time, that process, each week, of approximately a year-long process, there is a different form of meditation, a different form of connection to the Creator that is taught each week. It's a very powerful process. There's a section of the Talmud in Haggigah, the book of Haggigah, the section of Haggigah, which is essentially the describing the Pesach offering and the associated Haggigah offering. But the what is taught in that section is these different meditative forms that he was using to reach out to different nations, different people. It still goes on today.
That's the way to walk the banks of a beautiful water on there.
So we're out of time, so.
Okay.
You all have a good evening, and we'll have a session of the Ari tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom. Nice to hear from you, Brandy. Here, come on.
Thank you. Thank you.